Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who is somehow 30 under 30. How are you?
That's not correct. I'm doing well. It is 30 under 30 season for Voices of Wrestling. 30 to 16 dropped yesterday, the honorable mentions the day before, and we may be live on the air when the top 15 come out. But we just kind of wanted to talk about like some bigger picture things in wrestling today, I think.
Yeah, because we've got like Fyter Fest just happened earlier this week, and there were some interesting things. One, Omega Okada, and I think we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But I think the first thing we should talk about is the whole Mariah Mays saga. And we've kind of known this was coming for a while, that, hey, she came into AEW, she was great, and then all of a sudden, hey, she's gone, and she is officially WWE bound, having debuted this past Tuesday on NXT. But I think it really, something we really need to focus on is the kind of the big picture of what this means in the world of professional wrestling, Fred, because there are too many people who just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, let's be fair to them, because wrestling movement really in the US really died out for a while there in this century. You know, when you had a period where basically for 20 years, WWE, outside of a few years with TNA, was the only game in town, essentially, as far as like top American / North American wrestler acquisition. You did, of course, have things like Christian Cage jumping to TNA and Kurt Angle going there when he was released by WWE. But for the most part, the only real serious branch or the only real serious place to go was WWE, for better or worse. Cough, cough, worse. So we are in a new era where, you know, AEW is far better in terms of offering competitive contracts to wrestlers and getting them to sign. And we've seen that with various talent either deciding to stay with AEW or with making the jump from WWE to AEW, or just outright, you know, being outside of that ecosystem and choosing AEW. You know, Kazuchika Okada, we had FTR make the jump during the pandemic. I just actually, cheap plug, I just did a podcast about that on the ballot with Ryan Nelzy. About their Hall of Fame case, breaking that down. That'll come out in August, so look forward to that. You know, and so on and so forth, you know, all these different people, Adam Copeland, John Moxley was a huge one right at the start of the company. And so it is very much a different era than it was for literally the lifetime of some fans.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one, because There's so many people, Fred, that I've seen that should know better, that should understand the concept of wrestling movement, and should understand, hey, this kind of thing used to be the norm and was good, that are just showing themselves. And it's very frustrating, because, look, would Tony have liked to keep Mariah May? Absolutely. But he also understood, and this is from the outside looking in, I haven't spoken to Tony Khan, but he understood, okay, this person is probably going to go to WWE the first chance they get. So let's create an entire arc to make a big star. And yeah, in the process, they made Mariah May a star for another company. That's just sometimes the cost of doing business. I mean, just look at the relationship that New Japan and AEW currently have. Just because they're probably going to jump to AEW because they offer more money doesn't mean you shouldn't try to make stars, because that helps your business. So Mariah May goes through this arc, and now Toni Storm feels like a top like 3 to 5 star in American professional wrestling. She's huge. She's that feud catapulted her forward and really helped her find what this timeless Toni character was going to be. And that's increasingly important as we continue to move along. But yeah, Mariah May is a star. She's got a phenomenal look. She's got charisma. There's still things that need to be tightened up with her work and some of her promos and stuff, because it's a little spotty. But the whole idea is, all right, we're going to get the most out of her while she's here, and we're going to maximize it. So she has the great run. She turns on Tony. She wins the belt. And then she drops it, and Tony all of a sudden is now the arguably the biggest star in the company. That's a humongous win for what Tony Khan was, and that was something, you know, he's commonly referred to as Mid-South Tony.
Yeah.
The ability to take something that you know you won't have for a long time and maximize it is something that honestly should be done way more, because you don't, these people don't have to have 10-year arcs. Like, The Miz probably should have left WWE like 10 years ago, because he's just been stale for that long. Like, it's different with in the world of sports. And professional wrestling is sports adjacent. If, like, Michael Jordan spent his entire career with the Chicago Bulls, but every year that Chicago Bulls team was different. It's a different style. It's staying with one team is different than being creatively fulfilled. That's why television shows don't usually last more than like 5 or 6 years, because at a certain point you just run out of stories to tell. And that's why Wrestling Movement is so good, because they go into a new company, they have a fresh list of opponents, a fresh list of ideas, and it feels rejuvenated. Like, that's healthy. That's good. Now, Mariah May still could have done plenty in AEW. Plenty of people she could have faced.
Yeah, she wasn't done. I mean, let's be clear. But
having her be done is also not the worst thing in the world, because she had her arc. She left it at the perfect time. She got bloodied out of the company. Yeah. And if she comes back, there's still all of that on the table.
Oh, yeah.
Wrestling Movement is good. Like, this would be good if the inverse happened. If Mariah May left WWE on that same arc to go to AEW. Wrestling Movement is good like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that this is utterly fine, you know, for professional wrestling at large. In fact, it is better than the alternative, because you freshen things up. You don't get John Cena, Randy Orton done like 70,000 times on TV. And, you know, it was great in the 90s to have like Sting as the WCW guy and Undertaker as the WWE guy, WWF at that time. But, you know, I mean, we would not have had Stone Cold Steve Austin without Wrestler Movement. We wouldn't have had the NWO without Wrestler Movement. We wouldn't have had Mick Foley without Wrestler Movement. So on and so forth. It's really vital. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of kind of panic attached to that, because WCW eventually, everyone has PTSD from WCW's death, and even people that weren't around at the time. And the thing is that, you know, that is a unique event that is unlikely to repeat anytime soon. because basically they were bought out a couple times, and the leadership was so terrible there that like everything just cratered. And I don't think there's any reason to expect that to happen anytime soon with either WWE or AEW. And yeah, it's just it's normal and it's healthy, and I think both companies are in a healthy spot. And this is just how wrestling should work, and it's going to be healthier long term.
Yeah, I agree. I like the idea of having movement. Keeps things we just keep saying, it keeps things fresh. And I like the idea of people coming in and doing short arcs. Like I still remember during the pandemic, like Matt Cardona came in and did a 5-match arc. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got over a story. He helped Cody. They won a tag match, and then he disappeared. Like, that kind of stuff is okay. We've gotten, as a collective whole, not you and me, Fred, a collective whole, we've gotten too much in this mindset. Oh, you can't cut this person. Well, this is a sports adjacent thing. So you're going to have like releases and stuff and contracts expire, like sports.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. Now, it's not good that people don't have jobs, but they can find other jobs. It's good to see that kind of refreshing movement. And well, we're humans. We have real human emotions and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, Fred,
speak for yourself.
Yeah, you are a robot. Our job is to analyze the world of professional wrestling and releases, maybe not releases, but contracts expiring, movement, freshening things up are all good things for the product.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing I'm going to say is I 100% get the reaction to anyone leaving. I mean, it could be your favorite wrestler. My favorite wrestler growing up was Owen Hart. Did not end well. But I mean, if like you love R-Truth, I get why you would be upset about him leaving WWE. That's perfectly reasonable. But I think the really interesting and really understandable thing is the backstage reaction to it. To because Ron Killings, R-Truth, has been there forever. It is a preposterously long run, especially for like a kind of a mid-card, comedy figure, which he's basically been since like 2011, 2012 or something, maybe 13. It's really kind of, it is very unique for a guy to be in one place for 17 years, and especially if they're not like a top star. And I think it's fair to say that R-Truth was never really a main eventer. Outside of like kind of a misplaced 2009 heel run on top, where I don't think he really fit in like that. But, at least for the past, let's say, 13 years, more or less, he's been a non-main eventer. That doesn't mean that he didn't contribute. And I know a lot of people enjoy the comedy he did, although I think it quickly became the same joke over and over. And there's some fantasy booking I saw online that is deeply cursed as a result of that. It's for his friend, for people backstage that like him, like, he's been there forever. And I saw Sean Ross Sapp say that there are people backstage that are shocked this happened. And one of them said, this could happen to any of us. And it's like, yeah, no shit. Because WWE is owned by TKO, which is in turn owned by private equity. And what that means is they're going to try to maximize the value out of what WWE is. And that's going to involve cutting costs to some extent. And we just had from Hugo Savanovich this week a report that Roman Reigns is, that maybe people in TKO are looking at his salary and are going to want to renegotiate him down. And, I think some people reacted to that like it was an insane thing, like there's no chance of it. But, look at what TKO, what UFC did to their top stars, to Jon Jones and Conor McGregor for years and years. Like, they barely fought for a period because they wanted more money and UFC was not going to give it to them. Now, there are market forces that are going to prevent them from fully happening in WWE, and that's basically AEW. Because WWE is driven to weaken AEW because they want to get to the monopoly state that UFC has and has had for a while. And so they're going to take steps to weaken AEW, and that includes running counter events that they do all the time. And anyone acting like that they don't is just not a person to be taken seriously. Like, it is, we're at 6 years now, and it's just like AEW announces a show, and coincidentally, within 3 days, either way of that show, there's going to be, or maybe a week, there's going to be a WWE show trying to kill the oxygen in that area for AEW. Oh, for at least the big shows, not the weekly TV, obviously. And so, like, you just have this situation, and part of that is going to help keep salaries up for wrestlers, but if there is no AEW, I mean, I would not be shocked if Roman Reigns was already frozen out to try to get him to agree to a lower salary. Like, they've proven, at least on the UFC side, that they are willing to sacrifice, you know, getting those pay-per-view buys because they think don't want to pay that much money. And additionally, if you look at studies that the likes of Meltzer have done in the past, the percentage of revenue that UFC and WWE workers get is minuscule in comparison to, like, the NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL. And, you know, then we get into the unionization conversation, which is a bit far afield from where we started, but that's a, you know, wrestlers need to unionize, but that's never going to happen, seemingly.
If wrestlers unionized, that would change everything, but it would also be incredibly difficult considering indies, yada, yada. There would be a lot of red tape to get through. But I do want to kind of divert the conversation back to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
We knew this was going to happen at some point. At what point does Roman Reigns just say F you to the WWE? And if he becomes a free agent, would he sign elsewhere? And I'd be very intrigued of what a Roman Reigns run could look like in AEW, because I do think some of the matches that he has are formulaic, but I am curious if he can put together a truly good non-WWE bullshit kind of match. Like, one of the bits was always Roman Reigns in a G1. Roman Reigns in a G1. Mm-hmm. But I am really intrigued what he could do outside of the ecosystem, how long it would take for him to adapt, and if he's capable of being able to have some, like, really good matches, because there is a lot to work with. There are some limitations, but he's also a pretty good worker.
Used to be, I think it would be my take.
Well, now, here's my question. How much of that is just he knows he doesn't have to try because mm-hmm. of what the formulaic structure is versus what he still has left in the tank? I think those might be two completely different things.
Yeah, that is fair. My response would be, I think that he would be far more likely to try getting into Hollywood full time, at least for a while. I think that's just my guess. It's not like I have inside info or anything to back that up, but I think it's the likeliest outcome, right? And I think that's not so much like, I just think he's too tightly embedded into the WWE ecosystem to not, you know, take that viewpoint, I guess I will say. That said, it's not impossible, you know, to do something else, to go to AEW. I think the biggest problem would be that I just don't foresee him being willing to change what he's been doing to get up to the working standard of what AEW puts on. You know, the kind of, their main eventers are like, you know, Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland, Jon Moxley, Will Ospreay, MJF, Kenny Omega. Like, you know, like, there's the vast majority of those guys go in the ring, you know, to varying degrees, you know, when they have to. And so I just don't see, I don't see that being like a natural move for Roman Reigns. And so that's why I think it's more likely that he would try to become an actor full time. I don't know that he'll knock it out of the park there, but you know, then again, I would have predicted that there's no way that Batista would have done that either. And he definitely has. So hard to say there.
Yeah. Batista's such a unique one too, because how
he
many
took it seriously
he did, but how many of those type of guys, because and I don't mean this as an insult, but in comparison to the rest of Hollywood, Batista's a meathead. How many of those type of guys can Hollywood really sustain at that kind of level? Roman Reigns, I think, is going to be a lot more geared towards that, because he's going to enter a world where he's going to be with The Rock, Jason Momoa, like these already super charismatic over individuals who have proven themselves at a high level. Can he actually break in like that? I have sincere doubts, because like Cena, incredibly charismatic. The Rock, incredibly charismatic. Roman Reigns, not really. Plus, his teeth are so white that like a camera would just, it would just bounce right off of one of those things. So
you could, that's a common thing in Hollywood these days, is the ridiculous teeth.
Yeah, the veneers.
Yeah. What I would say is Hollywood is just like wrestling in the sense that they're always looking for new stars. And, you know, Roman Reigns would be new to them, to that field. So I wouldn't rule it out. It's hard to project, you know. I do know that Roman has the rep of when he's not doing the scripted stuff, he comes off much more charismatically. Like, that's something that Meltzer has been saying, you know, for decades at this point. I just, you know, it's an interesting scenario, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. And I don't know what the future will be for him. I just really think it's unlikely that he'll end up in AEW. Never say never. And it would be interesting to see, like, what the effects of that would be, but I'm just not betting on it.
Yeah. It's to see what happens there is going to be really interesting. But if I'm AEW and he somehow becomes available,
oh yeah, you have to consider it if you're Tony Khan. Now, I do think the biggest issue is you're going to have a lot of people mad about it. Because I think the most likely thing is he comes in and they kind of try to continue what he was doing in WWE. I don't think they're going to be like, all right, thanks for coming to the company. Now, I look forward to your next match, which will definitely be 4.5 stars.
What I would find really interesting with a Roman Reigns run in AEW is, one, how much would Tony Khan be willing to pay? Because you can make arguments on both sides. On the negative, well, you don't want to pay him more than your actual great wrestlers, because he's not going to be better than most of the roster. He's like, even like your mid-carders, they're just, from an in-ring perspective, they're just going to be better than Roman Reigns. But on the other hand, it would be a huge coup to sign Roman Reigns away from WWE, and that perception can be worth way more than any dollar amount that you pay him within reason.
And let's be frank, they wouldn't care about the work rate of Roman Reigns in this scenario. Like, that's not why you sign him. I would consider Bobby Lashley a success in AEW so far, I think. And he's not at the working standard in general. Like, he's not bad by any stretch. He's good, but he's not putting on, like, they've had the worst match on several pay-per-views in a row now. So I think that I fully believe that if Tony Khan was given the opportunity to sign Roman Reigns, ignoring the will Roman do it, let's just assume he will, I think Tony Khan will 100% do it and will not think twice about it, and he'll back up the truck. I mean, he did that with CM Punk. He paid CM Punk enough money to get him out of retirement. So I don't see any way that he will refuse to do the same with Roman Reigns to get him to make that jump if it comes to that. I mean, there was negotiations with Randy Orton several years ago, which helped drive, if I recall correctly, which drove up his price for WWE. And excuse me. You know, I if he's going to negotiate with Randy Orton, there's no way that he's not going to negotiate with Roman Reigns if given the opportunity.
Yeah. It's I'd be fascinated to see it. I want to jump back as we continue talking about the landscape of pro wrestling, this R-Truth thing. One, it still makes me sad that he wasn't treated like a good professional wrestler when WWE first signed him. Because Ron the Truth Killings was one of my favorite acts in real time when he was with TNA. I loved watching him work. He was never a five-star worker, but he could deliver in the low fours. I thought he was a good, solid hand that you could push to like an upper mid-card level and be a title challenger. I mean, he won the NWA World title a couple times, which you can argue, hey, maybe that wasn't like we were at a weird point in the lineage of that title, but you still won the NWA World title. Like, and then he did the stuff with Three Live Crew, which I thought was really fun. And like he was such a unique worker, but of course, once Vince finds out you're funny, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it makes me sad that that's what his career became, because I thought he was a really solid worker and a good guy to have in the mid card, but he really never got that chance. But I kind of go through all of that to say, I really wonder if this might be the straw that breaks the camel's back for a lot of these WWE fans who aren't, and I don't mean this as an insult. A lot of these WWE fans now aren't traditional wrestling fans.
Yeah.
They're not like us. And that's not to say it's an insult. It's just kind of what the reality is, because these are people that have come into wrestling fandom so late and they're only seeing it through a WWE lens. And the modern wrestling fan is, or modern WWE fan specifically, is just not cognizant of anything when it comes to history, when it comes to how this business works. They're WWE brain. And I wonder, there's a lot of negative vitriol about, he wasn't even released. They're just not renewing his contract. And I mean, from a TKO perspective, that was probably a seven-figure deal where R-Truth is basically giving you nothing of value.
Yeah.
So is this the one thing? Because we've already seen ratings are trending down from where they were after the transitions. So you obviously had the Netflix high 1 week was like 17 million hours.
Yeah, you can't count that.
And then it went down to like average without that number, it was 6 million. And now it's like 4.9. Like it's significantly dropping. SmackDown's kind of doing the same thing. You get the initial bump, but then it starts to settle in. And then after that settle point, it's still dropping a little bit. So WWE feels like it's really cold right now. Well, I mean, Cena.
No, it's
not helping, but
you can't say it's really cold, but I do think that they're peak. It has cooled some, but there's a big difference between cooling off a bit and, you know, free fall. They aren't in free fall. They aren't in like, they are not fully out of the hot period, but it does feel like that post attitude area that that they, you know, the post like 2002, 2003 era, where, you know, you could still be like, well, they're doing well regardless, but they're still, they aren't where they were even a year ago, I would think is fair. And I think that we are, you know, the bloom is off the rose and so on and so forth. Now, what I think with I do 100% think that they are entering a decline phase, though. How far and how long to be seen. Will they pull out of it? Maybe, but I think it's pretty fair to say that they just had a bad Mania season, and that's usually not congruous with, you know, being successful overall for WWE. And talk has swung back towards AEW because they've had basically at least almost a year of like just great TV week in, week out. So they that may finally be getting fully acknowledged to the point that even the WWE partisans or WWE inclined are noticing. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the industry does change, and it changes faster than you think. It's not a situation where, like, typically where something dramatic happens and then it all goes away. Like, that's just not usually how it works. It's just, you know, fans, after a while, you know, they kind of get burnt out on it. And it's not everyone that sticks around to a hardcore extent like us. And it is interesting to see, like, the current WWE fan reaction, because so many of them, I think, are new fans that don't really have any kind of appreciation for the history of the industry or the business, or, you know, even the WWE itself, other than what they're told. And as such, you know, you get like, you know, it'd be like a new NFL fan being shocked that a guy that, like, a quarterback that's been with a team for 8 years is being let go, you know, and being shocked by that, you know. And you and I would know, well, that's just how the NFL works, because, you know, it's kind of a brutal business. I think that they tried with Truth as a main eventer during the whole, you know, Awesome Truth period, where he and Miz were the top heels in the company in late 11, maybe 12, I'm not sure which. And it didn't work out. There was a wellness policy suspension. Remember that? That thing that they've completely ignored since AEW launched that policy. Truth was suspended under that, and I think he kind of lost his push as a result of that. So, I don't know. I mean, like, is there, I don't know what else to say about it, I guess. What are, you know, is there anything else that you have thoughts on about it?
Not necessarily. It's just the fan reaction and how Sean Rossap said that within the locker room of people he's talked to, and then the fan reaction online, this is the most negative anybody had ever been about a WWE release or contract expiration. I found really interesting.
You know, clearly a well-liked guy, and he was kind of had reached like lifer stage there, right? And this was a company, WWE was a company that did have some lifers. Kevin Dunn, you know, as one example, because Vince was loyal to him due to his father doing Vince's father a favor, saving some tapes, you know, way back in the day. And Kevin Dunn, you know, was inflicted upon us for years and years. You know, again, this is a different era, and this company right now is part of a, you know, that investment company that isn't going to give a shit about that whatsoever. Like, they just don't care. They're 100% motivated by dollars and cents. And you know, I think it's going to be to a brutal, it could very easily be to a brutal extent, because, you know, you look around the retail landscape, a lot of these companies that are closing up shop, like JoAnn, and, you know, GameStop had its issues, like where they nearly closed during the pandemic before becoming a meme stock. But like, just retail spots are endangered because so many of them have been bought out by venture capital, and venture capital, just when they buy a company, they're like, we need to extract every possible dollar of value out of this. typically. And so with that in mind, they aren't going to care that some guy's been there for 15 years and is well liked by everyone. They're going to look, is he making us anywhere close to what his salary is? And clearly with killings, they thought not. Which I can't kill him for. I mean, frankly, he was not a draw. I know that Sean Ross Sapp put over that he had a best-selling t-shirt, but I mean, that was clearly in reference to like the whole feud he did with John Cena there for a couple weeks for Saturday Night's main event. And I would have been shocked if, you know, they would have had big plans for him after that. So, yeah, that's just kind of the situation. It sucks for, I feel bad for Truth, and I feel bad for the people backstage upset by it, but I mean, they shouldn't be surprised by it. I think that, you know, I'm reminded of the thing that Machine Gun Carl Anderson said about the backstage at WWE being filled with marks. And I'm reminded of the discussion Stephanie Vaquer had about how she was so desperate to get into WWE because it was her lifelong dream that she, she cried in the hotel room because they weren't making the same offer AEW was. And then she decided to go ahead and just go to WWE because she thought she'd be happier there. I don't have a problem with that decision, that, you know, but it's just like, you know, 30 years ago, you know, people would have just been making these decisions so wholly on, you know, what's going to make me the most money. And it's, you know, this modern era, like there's some people that are choosing to go to WWE because they believe that they'll get a better push or just be able to make more money long term, which makes sense. But there's also just the whole, I mean, it's just kind of a very interesting situation. I can't fully agree with Carl Anderson calling them all marks, but I'm sure that there's a lot of them backstage that are just like, I've always been a WWE fan, and now I'm in WWE, and, you know, it's not so much the, I'm not going to fight hard over money, I'm just really happy to be here. And I do think that's, you know, part of the situation here.
It's a problem in wrestling. It really is. I'm not going to besmirch anybody for wanting to be happy because there is something to, I'm going to take a little less money to go be happy.
But yeah.
It's the, and we're going to deal with this for probably another 10 to 15 years. And, but now we have 9 and 10 year olds who are watching AEW that are going to have AEW as their dream.
Yeah.
And in 2040, the playing field is going to be severely leveled out in that sense. It's the legacy of WWE is going to be less powerful because we have a true alternative, one that is sustained, one that has Fred's cracking open a beer already.
It's a Diet Dr. Pepper Zero. How dare you?
That pouring it on there without putting it on mute, Fred, you were just.
Nope. This is ASMR.
But I think we're going to get to a point where AEW is.
Oh, it's already at that point where, like, people in a formative age watching it will eventually want to become wrestlers, and some of them will want to go there because of that. I'm not going to tear anyone up for thinking they'd be happier in either place, WWE or AEW. But I think that it's fair to be critical of someone like, you know, short-circuiting their negotiations because they really only see one place as the place to be. I think that's, you know, given how short your career is or can be, I think it's, it'll just be smarter to not do that. So I'm not going to like sit here and be like, oh, what a mark Mariah May is for being excited about going into WWE. Like, she should be. That's a big thing. But I also think it's, there's a certain level of like, you know, you like with her, it was a little weird just because, you know, you did have her as like a major star in AEW. They pushed her extremely well. I think better than she, you know, you could argue her performances deserved at points. I always thought she fell short of what was promised. That's another conversation. I just think that I don't know. It's an interesting thing, and I don't think that it's fair to fully refer to it as being a mark. Like, that's a little, like, it's, I don't know. I'm torn on it because, like, there's obviously, whenever you look at, let's say you get a new job offer as a Vikings writer, you know, Tyler, you're not just going to look at, like, the number on the paper and only consider that. You're going to consider what it does to your schedule, how likely the company offering you is going to be around, you know, going to be around to continue to pay you that money. So, like, there's more factors at it. I just worry. I don't know if worry is the right word. I just don't think it'd be smart to have these opportunities and just be like, hey, I only care about WWE or AEW, and therefore I will only sign with them.
I guess the real question is, in that sense, Fred, what's a viable alternative that's going to pay you anywhere near what they do? There really isn't one.
Yeah.
Like, New Japan is not paying that kind of top dollar right now. And who can blame them, considering where business is at, where the yen is at in Japan is still in a rough spot compared to the US dollar. And that is a really big deal when it comes to foreign talent.
Yeah. And, well, I think the real concern, if you want to get into this, is, you know, what if we get to the point where WWE just tries to buy everything like they did with AAA? I'm currently assuming that's something of a special circumstance where WWE had the opportunity to buy them and wanted to get into the Mexican marketplace. But I would also not be shocked if they try to do this with either NOAH or New Japan, or even Stardom. And I think that is a huge concern, frankly. And you know, I worry the worst case scenario is basically we get into this kind of bidding war for global companies where Tony Khan tries to purchase other companies and everything just falls under this bifurcated there's a word for you landscape where everything is basically like under AEW or WWE control, and I think there's no way you can spin that as anything but a negative for anyone outside of those companies. Like, that's a nightmare scenario, because the great thing about global wrestling is you do get people being brought around with CMLL influence or New Japan influence or even smaller companies, DDT influence, Stardom influence, and so on and so forth, up and down the line, and to make that all fall into line with what WWE does or with what AEW wants. Because, like, I think one reason for concern here, if you care about anyone outside of AEW, WWE, which I do, AEW is my main promotion, but I mean, like, I watch, you know, we talk about this sometimes, I watch as much as I can from everywhere around the world. The real concern is that, you know, let's say Tony Khan buys part of CMLL and New Japan. He just made a comment about how, you know, sure, he was happy to have Nick Wayne in the Best of the Super Juniors, but he's kind of annoyed because Nick Wayne was starting to get over right before he went over there, and how, you know, it implied that he wished that he hadn't sent Nick Wayne over to Japan for the past few weeks. And then, you know, so, like, let's expand from that. If Tony Khan has ownership of New Japan or ownership of CMLL, then it's not far-fetched to believe that he'll have, like, his hooks in these companies and then want to be able to bring in, insert big name from New Japan. Like, let's say New Japan is doing a year-long storyline with Yota Tsuji, but all of a sudden Tony Khan decides he wants to do a month-long Yota Tsuji feud on Collision just as part of the mid card. What happens then? You know, WWE gets their hooks into a company. Like, are they just going to make AAA, like, you know, SmackDown, but, you know, Latino flavored? Like, what's the creative going to be there? What's the relationship going to be? There's going to be a lot of questions answered this weekend with that. But I think that also it's arguably going to be too early because it's still going to be in kind of a transition era. I think WWE is going to find out some hard facts about the AAA roster, but that's not why they signed or why they purchased AAA. So I don't know. I worry that we're on the precipice of like a worst possible outcome. And I'm really concerned that we're going to have like just a really bad, like, I don't know, for lack of a better way of putting it, like wrestling it, but fully in the late stage capitalism period. You know,
I get what you're saying.
Just monoliths versus monoliths.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm really intrigued by is how all of this is going to continue to evolve, because everything plays off of each other, and they'll change so much just minute by minute because of one thing can set off something else. And I think we'll finish the show off here talking about the latest shows announced by WWE. They have, Fred, announced a house show for Saturday, July 19th in Corpus Christi, Texas. And they are following it up with...
Weird. What an interesting date. I wonder what else is going on around then.
Yep. Raw in Houston the next week, and then SmackDown in San Antonio as well. They are explicitly... Their actions say they're scared shitless of AEW.
Oh, like, I mean, this is just decades and decades of what WWE's thing is. Like, they want to snuff anything out that can even give them issues.
Here's what's interesting about that, Fred. It's not the same WWE. And I know we keep talking about this is the WWE playbook. But when we say that, we mean this is the Vince McMahon playbook. Now, there are still some of those people in high power positions with WWE, but they're owned by a completely separate entity now. What's really interesting here is it's the next week. So what they're saying is, we don't want you to be tempted to think about going, oh, it's a 2-hour drive to Dallas. Well, I'll just do the 2-hour drive to Corpus Christi to go to see a house show instead.
Yeah.
It's a week later. But they're still introducing some of these things. Remember, house shows are pretty much done. I don't think they've had a house show since that Christmas MSG show that they did.
Oh, that's a good question. I haven't really thought about that, but I do wonder how... Let me pull up how many house shows WWE is doing. You keep going, sorry.
I don't think they've had a house show this calendar year. Now, I may be wrong, and you'll find that out here in a second, but that part is fascinating to me. And they're intentionally doing a house show not the same day, because remember, NXT is going up against All In as well on the actual calendar day. But a week later, they're going to start a 3-show swing in Texas, which, man, they're scared shitless of this company. And
oh, yeah. I don't know that I'd say they're scared shitless, but they just don't want anything else to exist. You know, that's the whole WWE mindset. And there's also the UFC mindset. Now, I don't know much about UFC's history of, like literally counter-programming other, you know, MMA promotions. But, okay, so you are technically wrong in a sense. Now, let's ignore like NXT Lives because those are different. They serve a different purpose. There is the Road to WrestleMania house shows they did back in March, but those were overseas. And I think that's kind of different from what we're talking about. So we would have to go back to basically December 30th last year.
That's the MSG Christmas house show, right?
Actually, it was in Detroit. Yeah, because it was a couple days after Christmas. This was a main roster house show. Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens, and Steel Cage. Main event. But, you know, that was 4 days after the Madison Square Garden one. There's outside of an overseas trip, there's not been an American house show this calendar year, excluding the NXT ones. And I am not counting those because I think that's not really the spirit of what we're talking about.
No, it's not. And that, in a sense, maybe they're not scared that AEW is going to take over as the market leader, which, let's be real, they're not going to become the market leader in professional wrestling anytime soon. Like, we're not going to try and gaslight you into thinking that. But taking any kind of market share from where this company is, because remember, in 2015, they were getting 5 million people watching Raw. Within 4 years, that was down to like 1.8 on average. WWE has not gotten better than that.
Yeah.
And remember, Netflix is different. Netflix is global. So that 1.8, we're talking United States. Mm-hmm. Now, globally, they do well, especially in Europe. But when you talk about...
Also, Bolivia, right?
Hey.
That's not a joke. Like, I seriously believe, like, Bolivia is always, like, in the top 10 for that country, if I'm not mistaken. But
interesting. Did not know that. But they're... The amount of people that consume WWE programming on the regular has dwindled. And AEW has bitten into that. If they continue to grow, like TV is somewhat stagnant right now. And we know how weird TV can be. We just talked about WWE. AEW's experienced some of the same stuff. They were getting about 800,000 to 900,000 people in like between a 0.25 and 0.3 in the demo. Now they're floating around 600 to 650. 0.11 to point like 1.8. Like, it's significantly shifted, but they still got a $185 million television contract from Warner Brothers Discovery because they consistently outperform nearly everything else in that time slot. I'm just so fascinated by how much this counter programming one will actually work, to how much of it will just continue, because this isn't 2004 WWE.
Yeah.
Will this end up being a net negative? Will this spark any kind of extra animosity in this perceived wrestling war that we've been in since 2019? I have no answers to any of these questions, but I do find it interesting that it continues to be a thing. It continues to happen. And I want to see more.
Yeah. And it's very interesting. I think... Honestly, this is, I would say, the kind of the scariest point in time for pro wrestling in the past decade. I know that pre-AEW things were pretty, like, scarce in North American wrestling, but you at least had, like, healthy scenes elsewhere. And, I don't know, I think if you look at what WWE did to the European scene, and apparently wants to do it again, when it hasn't even fully recovered, that's bad. I'm worried about what AAA will become, because I know, I mean, look, you know, you go back, like, in the 21st century, the treatment of Latino / Latina wrestlers in WWE has historically been awful. You know, like, you know, Alberto Del Rio was probably their best success. They tried with Sin Cara, just had no idea what they were doing. The Mexicals involved people riding to the ring on lawnmowers.
Man, I'm going to be honest.
Just leave that there.
So when the Mexicals came out, I thought it was cool as hell. And I was like 17, but I have a different background where I grew up driving lawnmowers like age 5 because my dad owned a business. So I thought it was cool that people were coming out on lawnmowers.
That you didn't realize the...
I didn't realize the stereotypes and the racism that was being portrayed at the time. I thought it was awesome that they were coming out on lawnmowers. But that was based on my own experiences. So, yeah, the WWE, like, even Rey Mysterio, they still screw up constantly.
Oh, God. The historic usage of Rey Mysterio is comical. And like, look, right now we got Stephanie Vaquer, who is just being pushed as a very good wrestler. And I mean, I think that there's a lot of criticism of the whole Chad Gable thing. I think there's a certain extent of we're just trying to get heat, and I understand that, but I also think, like,
here's the thing about getting heat, though. What the hell's the end goal with that?
Yeah, I think that there's also an aspect of it that this is a gimmick created by a room full of Trump fans to varying extents. And, You know, that's why they're like, oh, we can put the Gulf of America in the map. That'll be funny. And they had a pushback on that, you know, back like a couple months ago. I'm just saying, this is a, you know, just because Vince gone, bad man gone, doesn't mean that like everyone who thought like Vince is gone too.
Bingo. Bingo, bango, bongo, Fred. This is an interesting time. And as Fred can maybe see, my dogs are now starting, they're now starting their own wrestling match. So I think it's time to wrap up the show. Fred, do you have anything else?
Yes. This Sunday, I should be recording an episode of Wrestling Omakase with a friend of the show, John Carroll. We'll be talking about the 30 under 30 list that is partially out. We unfortunately did not record long enough for the top 15 to be released. So we don't actually know who's on it right now, but I'm not going to complain about that because, hey, look, I'm tired. Also, I have relaunched my Patreon. Yes, give me money. I'll write about wrestling. You can go to patreon.com/flagrantwrestling. I have now the past couple of days I've been busy. Haven't written anything since Gasp Tuesday. But I have done show reviews, or match reviews, I should say, of AJ Styles versus Kurt Angle from the January 4th, 2010 infamous Impact. I did a match review of Naito and Hiromu against Ishii and Taichi from back in April. I posted early access to my Dean 2 review. I posted a list of my top 25 workers from my as a preview of my FSM 50 post. I'm giving you previews of what I'm writing. I'm giving you... match reviews I'm not posting anywhere else. I'm working on a column about Ron Killings right now that I hope to get posted by the weekend. And I'll kick this all off by doing a little analysis of cage match ratings for the past 8 weeks of Raw. I think I mentioned that last week. So I'm trying to keep it going. I think it'll be fun to write about wrestling, just trying to make myself sit down and do that more often. So $5 a month, you get me just writing about stuff. And hey, if you want me to review a match, ask me to, and I'll do it.
Boom. And you can always check out all of my football writing at azsports.com. I cover the Minnesota Vikings and Florida Gators on a full-time basis and dabble in other NFL coverage and the NFL draft as well. Give us 5 stars because you love us. And we have very cute radio voices because, of course, we do. We'll probably spend next week talking, breaking down a little bit about 30 for 30 because the final list, the final portion of the list is not quite up yet as we are recording, but we will have that broken down.
Who do you think will be number one?
Who do I think will be number one? Kyle Patrick.
Okay. I'm guessing sorry.
I mean, I understand that we're in a bubble, but I even think for our bubble, Sari is still too niche. And that's not to say an insult. I had Sari in my top 10. I think I might have had her at 5 or 6. But it's – I had a problem putting her too high on the list because while she's got all this potential, is she ever going to be like a big star or is she just going to be – where she's at right now, where she can sell a bunch of tickets to produce shows. She's going to do smaller level Joshi companies. But is she ever going to be like that big star that she could be? Odie Marzi, I know it's a contentious topic. And like when you have like Kyle Fletcher, Toni Storm, it's hard for me to put her higher.
I think she's already been brought into stardom to help them out at points. So I think in Marigold as well. So I think it's pretty clear that she is seen as a big deal. So I'd push back on that. I just think she'll end up winning, getting the most points. So that's my prediction. Anyway,
it'll be fun to talk about next week. Thank you, as Odie and Marzipan, my sweet dogs, decide to have a wrestling match right next to me. Take care. God bless. We'll see you next week.
See y'all.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.